Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Today in your history headlines, a major sporting goods company comes out of a brilliant, innovative idea, and some number one draft pick running backs are some major holdouts on day one, and we'll all talk about it all in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen. And we have some great football history headlines to you from the date of April 29th, some great football history. So let's get right at it. And we're going to start off April 29th, 1927. John T. Rydell and his fledgling Rydell Company developed the first football cleat. According to a blog on the EdisonNation.com website, John Rydell taught mathematics, also serving as the head football coach and athletic director at Evanston Township High School in Evanston, Illinois, from the years of 1913 to 1927. It was during this time Rydell invented and developed the removable cleat around 1922. And during that era, football shoes were equipped with leather cleats nailed to the sole of the shoe. Changing cleats due to inclement weather required the services of a cobbler to install longer tanks. Unfortunately, because Northwestern University used the same shoe smith as Evanston Township High School, Rydell's team's football shoes were often not ready by game time. Rydell knew his idea would solve a problem for the masses, but lacked the needed funding to produce the new product of the removable cleats. Rydell had his shoes manufactured by J.P. Smith Shoe Company, and he and his wife installed the posts and cleats in the evenings after school was done. John continued to teach, coach, and produce his shoes until 1927 on this day, when, with the popularity of his shoes on an upward trend, he left the teaching job, therefore devoting his entire effort to producing the shoes. John T. Rydell Incorporated was formally announced in February of 1929, and their aim was to create sporting goods that were innovative, provided protection, and gave the best performance to athletes. And look what they become today. They have everything, all kinds of safety equipment in the game of football and other sports, but in particular, those Rydell helmets are right up there with the best of them. Next is our newspapers.com football history headline of the day, and it comes from the Victoria, Texas newspaper, the Victoria Advocate, on April 30th, 1980, and it read, "Lions make Sims number one NFL college draft pick." That's right. The day before, April 29, 1980, the Detroit Lions made the Oklahoma running back Billy Sims the first overall pick in the 1980 NFL Draft. Sims was a 1978 Heisman Trophy winner, and he was anointed as the big fish in this pre-draft class. A confident Sims was quoted in the article saying, "Whatever the pros dish out, I'm ready to take." And at that point in time, though, the Lions franchise and Billy Sims were very far apart on a mutually agreeable salary. Remember, the deals were not as structured as the way they are now, where the draft picks have a pretty good idea what they're going to be making and earning based on where their draft pick position is. At the time, Sims and his agent, Jerry Argovitz, were seeking a cool $4.5 million for a six-year contract. Sims made a statement about how the pre-draft negotiations were going. "Detroit will have to wake up. I was hoping to sign with Detroit soon. Everybody's making a 100% effort, except for Lions general manager Russ Thomas. He's made zero effort." Reports circulated the Lions had their opening offer somewhere in the neighborhood of $700,000, so the gap at first was indeed a wide one between the team and player. Finally, on June 11th that same year, a deal was struck, when the Detroit Free Press sports page posted the headline, Lions Billy Sims, I Believe in Miracles. The results of the financial package were confidential as part of the contract, but we do know that Sims and his agent were giddy over the results. Speculation by experts for the Free Press article placed the contract at $2 million a season over 4 years. If you want to be able to read through some old articles like the Detroit Free Press, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you get access to over 640 million pages worth of news from the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Ireland, and more, dating back to 1798 all the way to yesterday. Get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. And with a paid subscription, you'll be helping out to support the production of this and many other Sports History Network shows. That's sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. Now, future Hall of Fame players that came out of that 1980 NFL draft were Bengals tackle Anthony Munoz as a third pick, wide receiver Art Monk taking at the number 18 spot by Washington's franchise, and Dwight Stevenson, a center, chosen by the Dolphins with pick number 48, according to the ProFootballReference.com. April 29, 1981, South Carolina running back George Rogers becomes the first pick of the New Orleans Saints in the 1981 NFL draft. Rogers deservedly won the Heisman Trophy for his outstanding All-American 1980 season with the Gamecocks. Rogers did not pan out quite as well as a pro, though, but an amazing seven of his draft classmates so far, per the Pro Football Reference, have made their way into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. For starters, one of the top linebackers of all time, Lawrence Taylor, was the second overall selection by the Giants, soon to be followed by defensive backs Kenny Easley at the number 4 spot by Seattle and Ronnie Lott, the 8th pick by the 49ers. In the second round, more future Gold Jacket Bears joined their teams as the Bears took Mike Singletary at number 38. Howie Long was scooped up by the Raiders at number 48, and the 51st overall pick of Ricky Jackson by the New Orleans was a gem. Russ Grimm may have been the steal of this draft as Washington chose the lineman with a 69th overall selection. April 29th, 1986. The NFL draft class of 1986 started off with Auburn running back Bo Jackson becoming the first pick by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. According to a story in the Orlando Sentinel, the Bucs took a big chance with the high pick of Jackson because Bo warned the team officials he would not play for Buccaneers owner Hugh Culverhouse. Apparently, Culverhouse, the Bucs owner, sent his private jet to pick up the reigning Heisman Trophy winner for a physical and a visit. Jackson was soon ruled ineligible to play baseball for the Auburn Tigers because Tampa Bay had failed to check on NCAA and SEC rules, despite assuring Jackson otherwise. Jackson held true to his word and turned down approximately $7 million with Tampa Bay to play in the Major League Baseball's Kansas City Royals for $1.6 million. After waiting a year, the Buccaneers lost all rights to Jackson and he became eligible for the 1987 NFL draft, and the Raiders took a flyer on him in the 7th round of the 1987 draft, and Bo ended up playing for the black and silver. Going back to the 1986 draft, though, there was only one player I could find that is currently enshrined in Canton, and that is San Francisco 49ers' fourth-round selection, 96th overall, from James Madison University's defensive end, Charles Haley. April 29, 2006, Mario Williams, the brilliant defensive end of North Carolina State, was the first pick of the 2006 NFL draft by the Houston Texans. This draft is still a little bit too fresh to have players placed in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So here are the first 12 picks, and there might be some future Hall of Famers in here. This is per the Pro Football Reference website. Number one, as we said, was Mario Williams. Second was Reggie Bush, a USC running back that went to New Orleans. Tennessee Titans took Vince Young, the quarterback from Texas. DeBrickashaw Ferguson, a tackle from Virginia, went to the New York Jets. And A.J. Hawk, a linebacker from Ohio State, went to Green Bay. Vernon Davis, a tight end from Maryland, went number 6 to San Francisco. And Michael Huff went to the Oakland Raiders. He was a defensive back from Texas. Dante Wintner, the defensive back from Ohio State, went to the Buffalo Bills. And Ernie Sims, a linebacker from Florida State, went to the Detroit Lions. Number 10, Arizona Cardinals had chose Matt Leinart, the quarterback from USC. And another quarterback, Jay Cutler, from Vanderbilt, went to Denver with the 11th pick. The number 12 pick was the Baltimore Ravens, taking Helote Nada, a defensive tackle from Oregon. Now let's bring you up to date on our birthdays of Hall of Famers for this April 29th. And we'll start off in 1914 in Jacksboro, Texas. The fine Texas Christian University Center from 1933 to 1935, Darryl Lester was born. Darryl had the distinction of being the first player to have played in the southwestern United States and was a two-time All-American player. Lester famously captained the 1935 Texas Christian football team, which had a 12-1 record and beat Louisiana State in the Sugar Bowl. Darryl Lester received the great honor of being selected for inclusion in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1988. And after graduating from TCU, Darryl played two seasons with the Green Bay Packers and then retired early because of a shoulder injury. April 29th, 1918, Detroit, Michigan. The wheeling and dealing ball coach that once attended Alma College, Marquette University, and the University of Michigan, George Allen, was born. George had stints as a head man for both the Los Angeles Rams and the Washington Redskins during his NFL career. Coach Allen had an impressive 12 seasons in the league as his teams posted 118 wins, 54 losses, and 5 ties as a record. In fact, according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website, he never had a team with a losing record under his career. His coaching philosophy was not to wait to have success, but that the future is now mentality, and successfully pulled off 131 trades during his coaching tenure. 81 of those were with Washington, by the way. He was voted as the NFL's Coach of the Year in both 1967 and 1971. And in 2002, at the ceremonies in Canton, Ohio, George Allen was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a coach and contributor. You know, that is just some great names in the game of football, especially in the NFL. And, you know, we got that great TCU player, Darryl Lester, too. But, you know, these players coming out in the draft, we get to talk about in college, a couple Heisman Trophy running backs, just outstanding. And we were glad to see they got to play football, which their careers would have been a little bit better for them, but we had some great stars that, you know, weren't expected. You know, how about some of those players, you know, deep in the draft, they're finding some of these Hall of Famers, those hidden gems. You know, those are rare. You know, the Tom Brady's don't come up every day, folks, but you know, even some of those 90th pick, I think we had made it to the Hall of Fame in today's edition. Another gem you can find is the sportshistorynetwork.com, where there is plenty of podcasts there, and I have all my partners there are ready to share some sports history with you, so make sure you check them out. Get them subscriptions on your favorite podcast player and listen to them, because they have some great things to tell you each and every week, and it's an exciting place to be. SportsHistoryNetwork.com. You can also go to our website, PigskinDispatch.com, and if you hit /podcast, you'll see all of our podcasts in one place. Right on the PigskinDispatch.com website, you will see all of our articles and plenty of history, and go to that powerful Earl to Go powered search box we have up in the upper right hand for any of your football needs. Put your questions or your keywords in there, hit search, and something should pop up there from either the Pigskin Dispatch or one of our sports history partner affiliate stations, that you can find all your football information. So make sure you check those things out. We have a nice promo coming up for you for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, for the PFRA's convention at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So make sure you listen to that, support them. And until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
The 2021 Professional Football Researchers Association Convention will be held at the Gold Jacket Lounge at the Pro Football Hall of Fame during the final weekend of June. Convention speakers will celebrate the 100th anniversary of the founding of the NFL. The fee for the convention is $50 for members and $100 for non-members. The fee includes admission to the convention and Pro Football Hall of Fame, meals on Friday evening and Saturday afternoon, and free parking. All convention activities are subject to COVID-19 protocols. For more details, click on the 2021 PFRA convention link at profootballresearchers.org.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.